Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, like Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. No matter if you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software keeps everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared company goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Happy Monday, happy Victory Monday to everybody out there. This is the Orange and Black Insiders, the aftermath, breaking down the what happened the day prior. Bengals beat the Ravens in the season finale. It wasn't the prettiest game. It wasn't the most chummy of affairs between the two teams, but Bengals get the win. They avoid the coin toss, and now they head into the playoffs with an 8-game winning streak. Obviously, a little bit of an asterisk with everything that happened Monday night, but regardless, Bengals are in the postseason. DeMar Hamlin is showing a lot of good health progress, so that's always a good thing. The league showed a lot of good support for him this weekend. I'm Anthony Cazenza, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, PIC, John Sheeran. What's going on, buddy? How you doing?
DeMar Hamlin's doing well. No, he's back home. He's in Buffalo General Hospital. He's been discharged from UCMC. He gave a shout out to all the fine doctors and everyone there for taking care of him for the past week. But yep, he was on a plane today from Cincinnati to Buffalo. He's back home. He's still getting taken care of. So my hat is literally off to everyone at UCMC for taking care of him for just how great these past few days have been for him. And then him getting to watch the Buffalo Bills game and seeing everything that happened with that, live tweeting through it all. It was phenomenal. So fantastic news.
Yeah, a little bit of a storybook game there for everything that had transpired. And, you know, they took the opening kickoff back and the whole deal. A lot of cool vibes from that one. And that game also did have implications for the Bengals and seeding and all that kind of stuff, too. So I think not only were we keeping an eye on that for DeMar Hamlin and hoping good things develop there, but obviously a little bit of a football interest there as well. And football was interesting this weekend, John Sheeran. The Bengals hosted the Baltimore Ravens. The coin toss was... And first of all, what'd you think of the Joe Mixon celebration? I think quite honestly, it looked like there was maybe four or five guys that probably had a coin in their glove or their sock or something like that already ready to go. So whoever was going to score that touchdown was going to do it. What'd you think of the celebration there by Mixon?
Well, I could tell by Tyler Boyd's reaction, because he was like an inch short of finding the end zone himself, and obviously he's boys with Hamlin. I feel like he probably had a celebration. You want to honor Hamlin with that as well. But also, like, yeah, I think they were all kind of in on, you know, kind of sticking to the NFL. So that would have been cool if he got to not only, you know, honor Hamlin, but also be the one to do, like, the coin flip celebration. But, yeah, I guess they're just playing with coins in their gloves. I don't know if I can't speak for the other guys who may or may not have had coins on hand at that time. But Mixon said, yeah, I just kind of thought about, like, last night. And like when Chad Johnson mentioned it on Twitter, and wasn't really sure where to put the coin. He was like, put it in his ankle tape or something, but that wasn't really going to work out. But it just was just rattling around between his hand and his glove. I would imagine you probably don't really notice it that much when you're running with the ball. But as soon as he scored, you could see him like rushing to take the glove off and then do the whole thing. But it was awesome.
It was awesome. It was funny. And obviously there were some other, you saw Eli Apple grab a sign at the end. I think that was maybe from a fan. I saw a fan on Twitter say, hey, that was my sign.
A fan named Eli.
Oh, was it? Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't catch that. Oh my gosh. Okay. So yeah, he grabbed that. And I think there were some others there that I saw Bengal Jim talk about, some that were maybe taken away or taken down or what have you. Anyway, it was, there were some definite vibes around Paycor Stadium this week. And let's just talk about this. Bengals win 27-16. I think we were all kind of hoping this game would have gotten to a point, especially with the Ravens kind of resting a handful of their guys, where the Bengals could do that. And unfortunately, that wasn't really ever too much the case. I guess you wanted to knock off some rust from not playing a full game the week prior. But, you know, now the Bengals kind of were forced to play their guys well into that game. And unfortunately, it cost them. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit in the form of the Alex Kappa injury. But your overall impressions with the Bengals win against the Ravens at Paycor this last Sunday?
It's really hard to find an AFC North game that ends up looking pretty. Like, I guess last year's Ravens game at home is the exception to that, but I mean, we all know why the Ravens couldn't really put up a fight last year. This year was not exactly the same, because while you had a few Ravens on offense who didn't play, J.K. Dobbins, Mark Andrews, Kevin Zeiler, they were held out of the game because they didn't want to risk injury. Most, if not everyone on defense, was out there for Baltimore. I think aside from Marcus Peters, who was on the injury report, so he may or may not have been able to play in this game at all. But they had Calais Campbell out there. They had their full front seven. They had most of their secondary, Kyle Hamilton, in his new role as their slot cornerback. So they were, like, you know, strapped to the teeth to hold back the Bengals offense. And at the beginning, they were having some issues with that. And it kind of seemed like the Bengals were doing what they could to build a comfortable lead in the beginning of the game and then slowly grind out the game, keep them, you know, beyond a two-score deficit and difference, to just make sure that, you know, the game is pretty much in hand at all times. And that, for the most part, was the case because they got a ton of help from their defense. Like, forcing four turnovers is always a recipe for success, especially against a third-string quarterback making his first start. But it never really seemed to be that comfortable. And in fact, as the game progressed on, it just became more and more uncomfortable for how the Ravens were keeping close with the Bengals because of how much success they had rushing the ball, and the fact that the Bengals offense just wasn't, it didn't seem like they were trying very hard towards the end. And that was probably by design. They didn't want to give away too much in this game, knowing that they were going to face the same defense next. And I feel like with that, there's only so much you can do to hide it, because this is a division rival. This is the second time you've played them this year. This is the sixth time you've played them in the Joe Burrow era. Like, they have so much tape on you just from playing them, but also just studying them all throughout the season, because they're division rivals. Like, no one knows this Bengals offense better than any team in the AFC North, including the Ravens. So, like, in terms of hiding what you're going to do or what you're probably planning to do in the wild card round, there's only so much that you can do while fielding an offense that can move the ball down the field. But, like, that just wasn't the case in the second half. Drew Chrisman had a career high of 7 punts because of it, because, like, the Ravens were just, like, they were just stout on defense, and they were putting a cap on the Bengals offense. And it didn't help that Burrow was clearly not hitting on all cylinders down the field. There were a handful of misses that we can definitely take a look at in this game, and that was definitely part of it. So I don't put it all on not, you know, calling a full game from a playbook standpoint. There were definitely misses that had the Bengals hit, they would have had a better offensive day. So I think it was just kind of a worst of two worlds, right? It was not exactly opening the playbook, but also they weren't executing very well with the things that they were trying to do anyways.
They were not. And let's take a look at here's, and I guess this is what I want to ask you about before we kind of show this stuff. I mean, you mentioned that the Baltimore defense was pretty much fully stocked in terms of who they played, who they trotted out there and whatnot, which is true. We know that they have developed into a very scary defense, especially with Roquan Smith now being added to the mix there. So, I mean, they can get after it a little bit on that side of the ball for sure. And they need to, because this team, regardless if it's Tyler Huntley or, you know, whoever is playing quarterback, they had some decent games with Lamar early in the season, but even with him, I mean, they were struggling to get to 20 points in a lot of games this year. So, and that has especially been the case since he has been injured. So, you know, that defense has had to perform. So I guess with some of the struggles that you, that we witnessed yesterday, I mean, are you chalking that up to strictly a bad day on offense, a really good day on defense? Because, you know, you mentioned, you know, they kind of went into a shell a little bit, and I think everybody said, yeah, they went pretty vanilla towards the end of the game. But, you know, second half, there were still some shots that they took, and they were there. They you know, I'm thinking of a couple of the T. Higgins that were just missed. And so I don't know your take on some of the struggles that we saw on offense yesterday.
Well, I definitely think they can play better on offense, but I'm just going to say right now, I think this is the toughest defense that they're going to play in the postseason based off of their projected path to get out of the AFC. I guess when I say postseason, I just mean the AFC side of the playoffs. Like, this Ravens defense, it gave them fits earlier in the season when they were still finding themselves. And I feel like even with how much the Bengals offense has evolved since that point in October, like, this is a defense that still works really well together and is obviously intimately familiar with what the Bengals tried to do well. So I think their defense matches up pretty nicely from a secondary to a receiver standpoint. Their defensive line is always very tough to figure out when they're blitzing and when they're dropping back. Like, there was those moments early in the game when Burrow, I think by the end of the first quarter, he had evaded like 4 sacks. He had evaded like 10 total defenders, all basically from like the effort of his own pocket awareness and mobility and agility. And that was probably the best thing that Burrow did on Sunday, was just evading pressure and extending plays, whether that was, you know, churning out 6 yards to get that rush off that incredible scramble, or evading a couple sackers in the pocket to find Tyler Boyd down the middle of the field on what looked like a no-look pass. So there were plenty of positive moments from him, from his perspective, in this game. But in terms of accuracy, like we're seeing on the screen here, like, he had Teagans a couple times down the field. One of them was for a touchdown off of a fake screen that they had set up the entire game. But
yeah,
they had,
I got that one coming up. Yeah.
And then they ran, like, I think, like, 5 or 6 more wide receiver screens in this game, and maybe one of them was successful. So they were trying to attack, you know, the widths of this Ravens defense, and they were pretty much on top of it for most of the game. So I think the Ravens defense is really good. I think they're going to be really good next week, especially when they get some of these guys back, and the Bengals offense just needs to play better.
Yeah, the first one to T. Higgins that you saw, if you're watching the video feed, that one was almost in the fourth quarter. That was at the very end of the third quarter, and this one is at the very beginning of the game, scoreless. They had 6 here. They had 6 on the other one, too. So, I mean, you see that one to Jamar that they tipped away. Very good play by Worley on that one, by the way. And here's the fake screen, which I thought was a really cool little play. They set up a fake screen and kind of did, was it like a wheel route with T, or did you just kind of a go route a little bit up the sideline? And so I thought this was a really cool play design. That's 6 right there, right? And then you look at this one over here. Let's scroll that one over. This is just one that you kind of feel like down the seam. There's you got Boyd there. So that's another one that you feel like you kind of missed some yardage at least there. I think I've got a couple more that I can loop in as well with this too. But I mean, that's kind of a little bit of what we've seen so far from, or what we saw yesterday, rather, that there was just a lot of, they took some shots and they were there. And granted, they have taken shots in the past against this Ravens secondary, maybe not this year so much with some of the new bodies that they brought in there and new talent they brought in the secondary there. But I mean, last year they were kind of bombs away, and bombs away kind of late against the Ravens in some of those games. So, I mean, they've taken some shots, and so they had the opportunities here. They just missed them.
Yeah, it's a matter of between like forcing it or just picking your spots and just missing. And it's more of the latter compared to the former. It wasn't like the Ravens were just forcing the Bengals to just play, you know, small ball in these quick and short passes. No, like, there were opportunities, there were windows, there were vacancies down the field for these big plays to be had. And they just couldn't connect on basically any of them. I feel like the first missed chase was probably the most egregious, because he had just stacked all those guys. I think like 3 different defenders on that play, and Burrow just underthrew because I don't think he could step in front of it. And then obviously
the defense, it goes downfield.
Sorry, I think that's looping in some sound there. But yeah, I mean, this one here you can see. Let's pull it up so we can get a zoom in. And I think this one does have sound on it, so I apologize, but. This is the one that I think T took a hit to the chops here, unfortunately. Hopefully he was okay, but
by the defense, it goes downfield, I mean, and it is in.
That's a deep one where you go, well, I mean, there's more yards there that you kind of felt like you could have had there and set yourself up for more points. And then, of course, this one was in the first quarter as well. The Boyd play, who he also kind of took one to the chops, and just, he, you know, that's just one you drop it in the bucket there and he just sailed it. And you feel like these are the plays that end up, you know, you can't make every single play. I mean, especially against this defense, but I mean, going into next week, these are the types of plays that you're going to need to make most of them, I think, if you're going to walk away victorious.
There's definitely a difference, I think, because looking back at this Bills game that is now erased from the ether, like, people remember from that, like, Burrow was just like, he was on time. He was in rhythm. The offense was just, it was operating at an efficient rate for the 2 drives that they had. And it was pretty much the opposite with this one. Like they could move the ball from here and there. Burrow did make some really good plays in and out of the pocket, but there were even some short throws that were just off-timed, and they were just inaccurate. There were some out routes that I know that he wishes he could have back. There were a couple of drops, I think, specifically from T. Higgins himself that he knows that he probably could have on any other day. So it was just an off day, I think, for some of these guys against the defense that is used to having some success against this offense from here and there. So I do still think at the end of the day that the Ravens defense is really good, and that needs to be taken into context with this. Like, there's a standard and an expectation with the Bengals offense, and I feel like that is something that's going to carry into this next week in terms of how to get better. But yeah, the Ravens defense is still good, and they should still hang their hats on, you know, keeping the offense to one of its worst days in recent memory.
Yeah, and you see Brad here on Facebook saying short and emotional week, the offense will be fine. I think Edith in the Facebook, in the Cincy Jungle Facebook page is also kind of saying the same thing here. So, I mean, I get that. It's just, you know, it's a little worrisome. This is stuff that you kind of feel like, well, you know, maybe this is more early season kind of issues, and you figure they would work it out at the end here, and it's kind of a little bit vice versa, and especially troubling when you play this team again the next week. But regardless, the Bengals get the win and do so with a little bit of everything. Some good punting, a couple big plays on offense, a couple nice plays on offense, some really good punting by Drew Chrisman, exceptional defense, including a score on defense. And John, I think one of the things that we are seeing a bit now, granted, some of his stats have come against, you know, maybe backup quarterbacks or whatnot, but having another ancillary weapon in the edge rush department and Joseph Osai and him just kind of being there, doing a couple things in relief, particularly when you have Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard potentially not all the way at 100%. Joseph Osai in there doing, contributing, obviously had the touchdown on the fumble recovery, but also had pressures. I think he had a sack as well. So that is good to see from a developmental standpoint, and getting that guy, getting his confidence going and getting him a nice niche role in this defense.
It's an underrated part of how this defense can continue to stay, not just stay afloat, but really dominate in the way that they did during last year's playoff run. Like, if you had told me that Trey Hendrickson would rush the passer like 15, 18 times this game and they would still end up with four sacks, like, I would find that incredibly impressive, because Hendrickson has mainly been the primary source of them getting sacks these past 2 years. Now, Sam Hubbard has taken a great step in that regard this year, and this was his first game back, and it looked like they weren't easing him back at all. He was out there for, I think, 85% of the snaps in this one. So, you know, he looked like he was back to his normal self, but Trey Hendrickson still in this limited role as his wrist heals, and giving Joseph Osai so many, you know, added reps that he didn't have early in the season. And they're still gaining a ton of production on a per snap basis from Trey Hendrickson. It's a great storm that's brewing with that defensive line, getting production from multiple guys now. And they're not just relying on just Hendrickson just winning on third down.
Yeah. So Andy's talking about, you know, the third and one, fourth and short issues that they had in this one. That, you know, that was definitely something that you also have to look at. And then playing into all of this is the Alex Kappa injury. And that one to me was pretty unfortunate, because it's a third and one. You got a big lead. And I understand, you know, you like to take that shot deep, but now you look at it and you go, you know, you kind of had this one a little bit sewn up, even with that play. And now, you know, Kappa gets rolled up on. I guess, thankfully, we have to say thankfully it's an ankle and not a knee. But right now it sounds like, you know, that I think people are asking for updates on him and whatnot. The update that we received from Zach earlier today via the beat writers and media coverage there, the update that we have is obviously there's an ankle issue, and he says he's doing okay, but he says it could be hard to envision him playing, something to this effect. I'm paraphrasing, but something essentially to the effect of it. He sees it hard for him to potentially be able to play this Sunday. And that is a big, big hit to the offensive line. 'Cause all of a sudden now, I mean, whether it's a week or the whole postseason or whatever, you know, all of a sudden now you're looking at the right side of that offensive line that you spent the offseason revamping, now, you know, at least gone for this one coming up.
Just terrible timing, honestly. It was so late in the game too. I think it was right after T. Higgins got injured, or, you know, he went to the ground taking a shot to the chest. And
it was at the end of the third quarter. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's when I felt like this game is just stupid at this point. The Ravens are just flinging themselves at these guys, and like someone's going to get hurt. Now, with Kappa's injury, it's a lot like Lyle Collins' injury. It looked like his knee got rolled up on just from an unfortunate circumstance, and you can't really blame the opposition for that. Guys are just playing football. But it's right. Like, yeah, this game has been really physical. It's been really chippy. You don't want to see one of your main guys go down and be unavailable for the playoffs, and that looked to be the case when Kappa went down and he could barely get off the field under his own power. And that's when I'm like, man, this freaking sucks. Like, I know this game is probably a win and everything, but like, God, this is the one thing that you don't want to see happen.
You didn't want to win that way, you know, with that stuff going on. Yeah.
Like you knew that at the end of the day, the Ravens knew that they weren't going to win. They wanted to be as competitive as possible to keep the Bengals starters out there for as long as possible, and mission accomplished. And they ended up getting one of their best offensive linemen hurt, and now you're down to a right side of the line that I think is still better than it was at this time last year, but still, it's still down to your reserves. You're still losing two of your best run blockers. You're losing the chemistry that you have between those guys, and now Ted Karras has to work with a new right guard who we can talk about in a little bit, but even still, it's still not where you want to be.
Yeah, and credit to our boy Willie Lutz on Twitter. He noted that his Kappa's replacement, Max Sharping, via PFF scored pretty decently through a quarter's worth of work. Now, granted, I mean, that game was kind of in hand and all that kind of stuff at that point. So I don't know how much stock you can take into it, but that was a nice contingency plan piece that they grabbed in Max Sharping, a guy who's got a lot of starting experience. He was decent as a starter, wasn't great, but was decent at times and has a lot of starting experience, and a guy that has some versatility, and you like that. So, if Kappa cannot go, by the way, didn't Alex Kappa play on like a freaking broken leg last year or something like that, or at one point in the past? So not to say that, hey, he's got to go Sunday, but I mean, the guy has champed through some gnarly injuries before. So I don't want to write him off completely, but with the way Zach was talking about him on Monday here, it was a little bleak. But regardless, Sharping is a nice contingency plan. I think you said, we could talk about him a little bit. If you've got some thoughts on it, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I like Max Sharping. I've liked him ever since he came out of college of Northern Illinois back in 2019. I thought he was a great pick in the second round by the Houston Texans. He played all over the line down there because the Texans are and continue to be a mess. I thought he was okay as a starter. And the whole situation with him getting waived and claimed and whatnot, it was a case where I think the Texans wanted to bring him back in some capacity, but they just had some roster decisions to make. And his contract situation at the time where he was waived, the Bengals ended up having more space than I think other teams who wanted to claim him or just wanted to pick him up just as a free agent if he was unclaimed off waivers. So the Bengals ended up getting him. And I think, like you talked about, like a very fine first guard off the bench that you could have. And you don't want it to be in this situation where his first start is in the playoffs against a really good defensive line, a defensive line that knows the Bengals and their blocking scheme very well. But this is just the hand that you're dealt with. And I think Max Sharping is fine as a starter, as a starting guard. He's not Alex Kappa. That should be very clear. Like, he's not necessarily a starter in this league, but as a guy that can just, you can keep you afloat at that spot, I think he's fine. He's not going to be a disaster. He's not going to miss a ton of blocks. He's not going to get pulverized necessarily, but there's a reason why, he was released by the Texans. There's a reason why he's been on the bench. There's a reason why they didn't even bother having him compete with Cordell Volson at left guard. I thought that was a potential story that could have developed right after he got claimed, because we just weren't sure what Volson was going to be, but they wanted Volson in that spot, and they've just had Sharping just be this active reserve for the entire year. And it's good that he's practiced with the team. He's good that he's been with the team for all this time. So he's got these reps. He's gotten familiarity with what that spot is expected him to do. So we'll see. I think he's okay, but until he's out there and playing, we won't know for sure.
Well, Bengals beat the Ravens 27-16, by the way, in some forms, depending on which source you may have looked at in terms of lines and all that kind of stuff. The line was, from what I saw, about 11.5 right before kickoff. Bengals win by 11. So I always look at that and just kind of, okay. Regardless, Bengals get a nice win. There were some kind of casualties, I guess, in the form of Kappa getting injured, but for the most part, they stayed pretty healthy. They are getting healthy at the right time. And now they have a rematch against a team here. And before we get into our next segment, John, just real quickly, your thoughts on the Bengals facing this team a third time. I know this one was a little weird because some players were playing, some players weren't. You know, it was kind of a weird mindset that both teams had to employ into this one. But I always get a little leery, you know, when you have to play a team three times in one season. That's a difficult task. It is at home, which is good news. And, you know, they're coming off of a win just a week prior. But as we said, this is a tough matchup for them. I think this is, personally speaking, I think this is one of the tougher matchups they could have drawn throughout the playoffs. But at the same time, familiarity either is your best friend or your worst enemy.
It's going to be both, I think, on Sunday, because, like, in terms of tape study, film study, and all that stuff, like they know what to expect. They know what this Ravens defense is. They saw all of it on Sunday. Like, the Ravens weren't holding back defensively. They wanted to grind out a game, win or loss, whatever the case may be, and they wanted to just give the Bengals all they got, and they certainly did give that. So, you know, the Bengals are very familiar with what to expect, and that will go into their preparation this week, and I stand by it. Like, this defense is arguably the best, most toughest defense that they're going to face on this side of the playoff bracket, and I feel like that definitely forges a lot of toughness and confidence going forward if they were to get past it. Now, if the game is ugly on Sunday, which I wouldn't be surprised if it is, then it is what it is. We don't need to continue being, I guess, concerned about the offense, because this defense matches up really well with them, and all they have to do is just grind out another win, and then we can focus on if this offense is going to take the next step against defenses that are a little bit more lenient to go up against.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200 or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR and legal, can stay connected and move together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Well, we'll definitely be talking a lot of Ravens wild card weekend throughout the week here. And I love when our listeners, first of all, we got a lot of people tuning in live, which is awesome, across multiple platforms, whether it's on the Cincy Jungle Facebook page, our YouTube channel, on Twitter. We got a lot of live viewers right now, obviously getting things going before the national championship game going here. A lot of new faces as well. And I love when our listeners and viewers tee things up here. You got Don, who he says, "Hey guys, I've been a longtime Bengals fan, and I'm of the Kenny Anderson and Boomer Esiason era." Well, Don, we are trying to get a treat for you with all of the coverage we are bringing this week. We are working to try and bring Ken Anderson on the program once again, so you will not want to miss that. We're working with him. We're set to speak with Mike Golick of ESPN and many other platform fame on Friday, so we're excited about that. We're working to get Daniel Wilcox, former Ravens tight end and now Believe in Ravens podcast host, working to get him in later this week. So we've got a lot of different stuff we're trying to do for this week, and then hopefully as the weeks progress through the postseason, get you more people on this show as well. And then just a big week in general for Cincy Jungle and its podcast channel. John, I don't know if you heard, but our guy Bengal Jim is having Andrew Whitworth on his show tomorrow night, so that'll be a really fun one as well. You gotta tune into that. And of course, you can get our show and all of the Cincy Jungle podcast shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major platforms. We are there. And if you like what we do on YouTube, you can, beneath John and that SB Nation logo there, you can click our show logo to subscribe. Click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available. And we've got memberships where we'll have exclusive perks and swag and all that kind of stuff for you too, if you feel so inclined to do that. But we're going to keep hammering you with content, especially as these Bengals continue on, hopefully, throughout the postseason. The other thing right here, and this leads us nicely into our next segment here, John. I don't know if nicely is actually the right word for it, but we're going to do a little believe it or not here. And it centers around some of the actions and reactions of Bengals and Ravens players. So let's get to a believe it or not about the style of play from the Baltimore Ravens that we witnessed on Sunday. What we saw, and I'll pull up some clips. There's some talk, John, and I think it was an article on The Athletic from Jay Morrison and Paul Daner Jr. that, you know, referenced some of the players being not pleased with the type of play that the Baltimore Ravens enacted on Sunday. I'll play some clips. I saw some things that I did not like. I saw some after the whistle stuff. I feel like, just personally, and I'd love to get your take on it, but personally, I feel like they flirted with the line. I don't know that they really egregiously crossed a line in their style of play. A lot of the hits and whatnot that we saw, I mean, I played one earlier with T. Higgins kind of taking one to the chops there. That's a legal hit. I mean, he was maybe defenseless a bit there, so if you really wanted to call that, you could do that. But it wasn't headhunting. It wasn't that. There was some stuff, though, that was close. And there was some stuff that I was like, I don't really like that. So I'll play some of this stuff, John, but with what you saw, and by the way, if you follow us on Twitter, we put some of these clips out on our Twitter account, and that's where we're going to show them for you. Obviously we're catching flack from Ravens fans saying, you know, Bengals fans and their players are soft and all that kind of stuff. Maybe we should play flag football, the whole deal. Goes with the territory. Really wasn't trying to say stuff is dirty. It's more just kind of, here's the stuff that may or may not have pissed the Bengals players off. Just some things we saw. I don't know. I just saw some after the whistle stuff that was more of the stuff that I didn't like, John, or the kind of some slamming and I don't know, just different stuff like that.
I mean, this is what you can do if you decide to do. You can enter a game and you can set the tone that you want to set, and you can see how that's received by the officials, by the other team, and you just go from there. And it was clear that the officials were letting these guys play, do what they will, and there's no reason for the Ravens, if this was their plan entering this game, to back down from that, because that's ultimately what they wanted to do. Like, again, they knew that they weren't going to win this game with Anthony Brown at quarterback. They knew they weren't going to win with most of their best offensive players on the bench and giving him basically next to no help. They were throwing Anthony Brown out to the wolves because their primary goal in this one was just to keep the Bengals starters in there for as long as possible and rough them up for as much as possible so that in a week's time, they're coming back and they're potentially, we're scared to play the big bad Ravens again. They're gonna punch us in the mouth and they're going to do all these things. Like, obviously the Bengals aren't really cool with it because, like, that's just not how they want to play. And that's regardless of these old tropes of AFC North football and everything, like some things are just still that they make you mad because, like, hey, screw you, buddy. Like, I don't want to do this to you, but you're doing this to us. And we're not going to take that lightly. Like, and either that's going to be responded in the next game or maybe the next season, whatever the case may be. Like, obviously the most important thing is to win the game, but some of these guys take this stuff personally, rightfully so. Like, this is their livelihood and this is the way that they want to play the game, and there's obviously disagreement on the other side of the ball. So yeah, it wasn't going over the line per se, but it was like, you know, this is just BS. Like it's clear why you're doing this, and we're just on this field for two different reasons.
This one was the one that kind of pissed, and I'll play a few more for you here. This is the one that kind of pissed me off here because of the reaction of their coach. You get a slam down here that could have theoretically, I mean, may or may not have been a penalty, depending again on how stringent of an officiating crew you have. And then you have the coach celebrating, you know, celebrating like hell about it. So that one was the one that I was like, you know, that's just, I mean, come on. Okay. So we're moving on here. And by the way, if you're listening to the audio side, that's the one with Roquan Smith and Kyle Hamilton, throwing Chase down on a loss play. You have this one again. This is kind of a football play, hits him in the shoulder and chest. Thankfully Boyd's okay. But the ball's sailing, it's going out of bounds, and you still take one to the chops there. Again, kind of just legal, but is it necessary? No, it's not necessary. And then what's this next one here? Oh, this one. Yeah, right here with Chase. He's got a 9-yard gain here. And, you know, as he's going to the ground, Roquan Smith again, by the way, he's ingraining himself very well quickly into the AFC North. This is one where he kind of wraps around Chase's neck and kind of pulling on his helmet a little bit. Again, it's just kind of like, well, I don't know. Obviously, Chase didn't like it, right? And Pirine didn't like it either because he gets right in there and shoves him off him. I don't know, man. I'm kind of with you. It's more about like, I don't know, maybe I'm just old school where I think about respect and all this kind of stuff and in sports and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, I wouldn't do that to you. Why are you, you know what I mean? Like you kind of said it in a different way. Like that's not the way I would do things. Why are you doing that? Especially in a moment where it's like, really, it just kind of looks like you're trying to tee things up one way or the other for the following week, whether it's heightening the animosity, getting in your heads, or I don't want to say it, but maybe even potentially hurting important players.
Like, and I'm thinking on the other side of this too, like, oh, if you're upset about this, then, you know, it's the whole like wussy like argument, like, oh, this isn't flag football or anything like that. Like, right. Guys, like we know what this is. And I think you said it best, like in terms of being unnecessary, like, yeah, like I have no more thoughts on this. It's so like, if I'm out there, this stuff is so beneath me. Because, like, I know you're doing this because you can't, like, actually match up from a football standpoint. This is the edge that you've decided to take because you can't have an actual competitive edge. So you're only taking this tough,
there you go,
this fake tough guy, like, physical edge that, unfortunately, the Steelers have also kind of identified with now because, again, they can't really match up with the Bengals from a talent standpoint from actually winning the football game, so they have to resort to this. And I know that Bengals and Steelers, or Ravens and Steelers fans listening to this are getting mad at, like, oh, we're the Ravens and Steelers. Like, we've always been better than the Bengals. We will continue to be better than the Bengals because of stuff like this. If you can latch on to this as your form of success by just roughing and toughening up the opponent, even in a loss, if that's the way that you want to go, that's fine. We'll take the wins.
Yeah, that's my take on it too. Take the W. But this is close. I mean, you look at it and bang, bang, and you're like, oh, that wasn't a big deal. But I mean, look how, I think it's Marcus Williams, 32, right? He's kind of just putting the elbow out there and helmet to helmet. I mean, I know Chase is going down and putting his head down to avoid the contact, but I mean, that's there, right? I mean, it's fringe, I think.
By the defense, he goes downfield and it is in.
We can watch
the fake by real quick. Being chased here by the defense, right. He goes down.
So, you know, I don't want to loop Bengals players getting hurt and stuff either. But, I mean, the point is some of this stuff, again, it's not. So the question we were asking, believe it or not, were the Ravens playing dirty? Were they not playing dirty? Whatever. I don't necessarily think they were playing dirty, but I think there's a lot of stuff that could have been called penalties that were not by other more stringent crews. And I think there's a lot of stuff that flirted with being dirty. And the thing that just bothered me about it, and I think you saw Zach Taylor get heated a couple times. The thing that bothered me about it, John, was more, especially when you see Jamar Chase getting slammed to the turf, the celebration of it by their head coach. That's kind of what I, and it's more like, hey, that's a hustle play. That's a physical play. We like that. And it's like, I don't think body slams when a guy's in a grasp is really how things, I don't know. I don't mean to sound like I'm on my moral high horse or anything like that. I that just didn't sit well with me.
No, and it shouldn't, because it's not sitting well with the players. Like, it's very clear that they were upset. That's why more or less we're talking about this. Like, we're not just observing this as like what we saw during the game and we're projecting. No, like the Bengals players on defense specifically, like that, like they didn't hold back because of what happened with the Ravens offense and what was going on between the whistles with all of them. So
yeah,
it's a team wide thing, and it's totally rational for these Bengals players to get upset. And, you know, even if they still win, like, it's still fine to feel uncomfortable with what's happening because it's not right.
Yeah, we're going to get to some more news in just a second here. But, I mean, I think also to your point there, and I think that's what was referenced in the Athletic article by, and go read that, by Jay Morrison and Paul Daner Jr. They always do a great job there. Look, I mean, I think it was a lot of I put up these videos, and I think there's a lot of stuff that we didn't see that was occurring, you know, the after the whistle stuff, the in the pile stuff, all the stuff that you didn't see that I think the players are pretty pissed off about. And I think it's also just, you know, I think some of it was from the defensive players, was it not? I mean, they were saying that it was the Ravens offense, like you said, that was kind of giving them jabs, or I don't know what else was going on there, but they were pretty upset about it.
Yeah, it's a team-wide message and identity that they sat out in this game, and it's clear that, like, you know, the Bengals probably didn't expect it. Like, they had other things on their mind. I'm sure they had thoughts about what the Ravens voted on for the, like, NFL committee, and like how everything was going on with that, and the fact that they tweeted out like, oh, we just need this loss and this loss and this win, and we need a coin flip, and then we host the game on. There was already animosity entering this game, and then the Ravens, again, they found a line, they identified it, they towed it as much as they could, they reached across it a couple of times, they quickly went back at it like, oh no, but yeah, it doesn't sit right.
Well, regardless, this makes, and maybe we're stirring the pot a little bit, and that's okay, but this is part of what makes this matchup coming up here so intriguing and so passionate between the two teams, along with those missed opportunities that we showed you earlier as well, the missed opportunities for points for the Cincinnati Bengals, and then obviously the Baltimore Ravens not having their starting quarterback along with other starters out there too. So this just makes this game very enigmatic and very intriguing in a lot of different ways, and of course it's going to be played on Sunday night. I believe it's the NBC crew, is it not, John, that's calling that one? So hopefully the Bengals will win for Chris Collinsworth. Can you give Chris Collinsworth a win, please? That poor guy, he calls their games all the time on Sunday night, and they never win for him.
There are a lot of questions around what you eat. How is it made? Where does it come from? What are the impacts of its packaging? The What You're Eating podcast is here to help you understand how your food gets to your plate, and put into context the full impact of the food you eat, whether that's on animals, the planet, or other people. Join host Jerusha Klemperer, director of Foodprint, as she dives deeper to uncover the problems with the industrial food system and offer examples of more sustainable practices. She provides practical advice for how you can help support a better ecosystem through the food that you buy and the systemic changes you push for. From practical conversations with farmers and chefs to discussions with policy experts on the barriers to sustainability, the What You're Eating podcast covers more than just the what. It covers everything from the why to the how of the food you love to eat. Listen and subscribe to What You're Eating at foodprint.org/whatyoureeating or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Speaking of, though, John, what's going on here? I mean, Lamar now, he missed what? It's his fifth game, right? He was supposed to maybe miss one or two. And so this is, by the way, on Cincy Jungle. Our fearless leader there, Jason Markham, put this one on here. But my assumption is that he is playing. You're also hearing all kinds of stuff that, hey, you know, he was supposed to, I don't know. If I'm the Bengals, I would prepare for this game as if Lamar Jackson is playing, because I would find it very hard to believe, unless there's a much more severe injury than is being reported, that he would miss this game. But it sounds like there's a big disconnect between he and the team at this point in terms of communication and everything.
I don't think he's playing for a couple of reasons. Number one,
you don't think he is.
I don't think he's playing because, now again, like I don't know for a fact if Tyler Huntley was able to play in this past game, but the fact that like he didn't even play in it, even though he was like questionable and he was the game time decision, it makes me feel like that they were like totally saving him for Sunday.
Interesting.
Now maybe that's a precautionary because they're not sure if Lamar can play, and I don't blame him for not being sure about this. But also the other reason would be, if I'm Lamar, like I don't see, if I haven't played in the five or six previous games leading up to this one, like what makes this difference in the grand scheme of what my plan is? And that's to make sure that I'm as healthy as possible for a contract. And also, if he doesn't, the less that he plays in general, and that includes the playoffs, the less likely the Ravens would want to just hold him hostage with the franchise tag, and that he gets a deal that he wants, or he gets whatever type of sign and trade that he wants, in order to just either get out of this offense that he doesn't feel like he thrives in, or just get away from the organization in general. So obviously a star quarterback suiting up for the playoffs, like you think that's what is likely to happen, but this is a very unique situation with a guy that is his own agent and he doesn't have any long-term stability. And he may also still be nursing an injury that could be more severe than we're thinking of. So for those reasons, I don't think he's playing, but I have been surprised before and I wouldn't be surprised if I'm surprised again.
Good points. Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't think to look that deep under the surface like you did, but I, you know, that makes a lot of sense now that you bring that up. But they still did a shell game all the way up to basically pregame warmups in terms of who was going to start. So this very well could be the same exact thing for the Baltimore Ravens here and who they trot out there. I just know that without him, and I don't want to, you know, I guess I'll eat crow if it ends up happening, but I mean, the Ravens without him are having trouble cracking 16, 17 points a game on putting up points. So, you know, I think to have a chance, especially on the road, you know, to have a good chance to win this game, they would need Lamar Jackson. But if he's not up to the task because of his health or whatever, he's not up for it. But that is a major, major storyline and talking point right now in the NFL. And I think, you know, some people are saying he's not going to play. Some people are saying he's going to play. And I don't think we will know until very close to kickoff, at least as we sit here a little under a week away. Continuing on here, we just did a believe it or not on the clean game, dirty game by the Baltimore Ravens. Well, I will tell you that their head coach seems to think that they did it all correctly. John Harbaugh came out, and this is on Baltimore Beatdown, the SB Nation. I'll pin that in the live chats for folks. The SB Nation site for the Baltimore Ravens. The quote is, "It's clear our players played a clean game against the Bengals." That was the quote. And he apparently did a lot of, he said he did a lot of reviewing, I guess, reflection, all kinds of different things. And here's some stuff, from, from DJ Reader, to Jay Morrison. There's some shit I don't agree with, by the way, he's just a quote machine, DJ Reader. I love that guy. And then that same phrase was echoed by Cam Taylor-Britt, the rookie. Just know that we owe them. Even though we won, we owe them. Wow. But here's what Harbaugh said. I studied the game really closely, obviously, and it's clear our players played a clean game, as they always do. Millions of fans watched the game as well, and they saw the same thing. So I just say, let them be the judges. I guess I'm not surprised that this is what Harbaugh would say to defend his team and their actions. But as we just reviewed, I don't know that I would be that outright or forthright. I don't know what I would say in his position, but I don't think a lot of people are in full agreement with him.
Nah, he's right. Millions of people watched it. Let them be the judges. Yeah. We're judging you. And we say that it was freaking stupid, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go this. Vegas does not like the Ravens in this one, at least in the opening lines here. And this is on Baltimore beatdown as well. The Ravens are currently underdogs, I guess, to be expected in a game like this. And with the questions surrounding Lamar Jackson and whatnot, what is the line right now? The Ravens have the Bengals are 6.5-point favorites right now. 43.5 is the over under, obviously not between the Ravens defense and their questions of quarterback, not accounting for a lot of points scored in this one. But the Bengals are 6.5-point favorites at home in the wild card round.
That's got to be the Lamar line. Like even after last game when the Bengals offense was not very good, and obviously the turnovers and I think the fumble recovery for six definitely helped, but they still won by 11, and that was with the third string quarterback out there. So I would assume that 6.5 is the Lamar line, and as the week progresses and there's no positive updates potentially, it's probably going to inch further and further away from the Ravens there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the season is over for the other two AFC North teams, and it's such a shame. The Steelers and the Browns, once thought to be playing for potentially, I don't know, something of significance yesterday, still kind of did a little bit because the Steelers were technically alive, believe it or not. And John Sheeran, Mike Tomlin, avoids the dreaded losing season once again. I can't even believe it. That's like an unbelievable streak that he's got going here. But
what do you mean you can't believe it?
I guess I can believe it. Yeah, I guess I can believe it based on his history. But this is just, you know, never blinking. It's a blog post by Teresa Varley on Steelers.com, and it's kind of talking about some different quotes and all that kind of stuff about how the Steelers players have responded to Tomlin and all the things that he preaches. And here you go. When he says it makes you don't want to have any type of fear, said guard Kevin Dotson. You don't want to blink at anything. You want to be able to go ahead. And I know we don't like how the Steelers play football a lot of times. I know that they are bitter, bitter rivals of the Cincinnati Bengals, but Mike Tomlin has the respect of every player in that locker room. And again, them finishing 9-8 with the roster that they had this year, that's a near miracle. I mean, I know the Bengals lost to him in that first game and all that kind of stuff. I just felt that they massively overachieved for what their roster had. And I think that does point to the coach.
Massive overachievers should be the Steelers' new nickname, the Pittsburgh massive overachievers, because that's just what they do. Like they managed to really improve Kenny Pickett's season as the year went on, because Kenny Pickett was not doing well in the beginning of the year to the point where it's like, should they be looking at another quarterback? And starting with that Bengals game, they got him to play more and more increasingly efficient football despite an offensive line that was really struggling to work together. They suffered some injuries here and there. Najee Harris was not the efficient running back that he was built out to me in the beginning of the season. They traded Chase Claypool in the middle of the season, interjecting some questions at the receiver room, And they managed to just grind out some wins towards the end because that's just what they always do. So that's just the expectation with the Steelers.
It's what they always do. Although, as of earlier this morning, on Monday the 9th, Mike Tomlin not prepared to give status of Matt Canada, the offensive coordinator, and other coaches. This may be more of a thing, John, where they may make some change-ups and whatnot. This is on Behind the Steel Curtain, by the way, the SB Nation Steelers site. This may be a thing, though, where they may give it another year with kind of attempting to restock the cabinet, so to speak. And obviously, they played two different quarterbacks this year. They think they've got something in Kenny Pickett and all kinds of different things. So, I think they may just say, you know, let's hold, you know, short leash, but let's stand pat with who we have here and, kind of march on into next year, add some more talent.
Yeah, like Bengals fans should want Matt Canada to retain his employment with the Steelers because that offense is not very difficult to defend.
No. And finally, with the Cleveland Browns, before we get out of here, just doing a quick whip around with the AFC North. They are now making the rounds with interview requests and all kinds of different stuff. They relieved defensive coordinator Joe Woods of his duties earlier on Monday. And so now they are – here's one, and that is Brian Flores, who is a defensive assistant, I believe, with the Pittsburgh Steelers after the wacky situation in Miami that he endured not too long ago. But here's kind of what they're doing so far, and this is on Dogs by Nature, the Cleveland Browns SB Nation site here. They are looking at Brian Flores, not going to do any other major firings. They have requested to interview Gerard Mayo, who is the Patriots, not only former linebacker himself for them, but inside linebackers coach, I suppose, for the Patriots. They've got all these coaches that have these nuanced positions like Matt Patricia and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, received the request from Titans to interview Glenn Cook for the GM position. I believe Glenn Cook is a guy who is in the front office with the Cleveland Browns, and now the Titans are looking to potentially bring him in for their vacant GM job. So they're kind of doing some different things with the defensive coordinator spot, but they are making changes on that side of the ball.
Yeah, Brian Flores would be an interesting fit there. Like, it feels like the Browns just have a lot of talent there, and Joe Woods just wasn't maximizing it. Now, I know some people who write for the Browns that were defendants of Joe Woods saying that the scheme wasn't necessarily the issue. There's just a lot of underperforming players on that Browns defense. So I don't know the intricacies of the whole situation. I just know that Browns defense has potential, obviously, with Myles Garrett and their cornerbacks and their linebackers. They've all stepped up this season. So I think anyone like a Flores' caliber or potentially a D'Amico Ryans or something like that. So, I mean, all that's on the table for them. And I would imagine that they're going to shell out some big type of hiring here because they're all in on what they have going on the other side of the ball.
And to finish this off, and we'll get out of here with our final thoughts and all that kind of stuff too. But to finish this off, John, I don't have all the names in front of me and I don't have an article pinned for it, but lazy ass. That's what I am. There's been some coaching carousel stuff going on. And I think this is a week where, despite what happens on Sunday, hopefully the Bengals win, but despite what happens on Sunday, I think we can start to kind of say, hey, pretty thankful for how the Zach Taylor thing has ended up working out for the Cincinnati Bengals, because I think really of that 2019 class of new head coaches, we're looking at only two, and that is LaFleur in Green Bay and Zach Taylor keeping their jobs. Cliff Kingsbury's gone. Obviously, we knew Hackett was gone before the year in Denver. A lot of different folks losing their jobs here this week, and this is kind of the unfortunate reality of what happens after the final week of the season. But Zach Taylor, you know, took a little time, but good things sometimes do. And so I think right now the Bengals are in a good spot with who they have in leadership positions, him being one of them, and especially when you look around the league and seeing teams, you know, kind of cycling through coaches pretty frequently.
Yeah, just looking back at that class, like, I suppose the one who's not still with his current team, but panned out was Bruce Arians, because he obviously won a Super Bowl with them and Tom Brady and everything. So I'm sure the, you know, the Bucks are satisfied with how that decision worked out, even if it didn't last very long. Freddie Kitchens was another one of that entire cycle. So yeah, a little bit better than the other team in Ohio did, and that's like. But in terms of just the moves that were, I think, questioned the most at the time, because there was a lot of obvious uncertainty with bringing in a quarterbacks coach who has no extended play calling experience at the NFL level. The fact that Zach Taylor is where he is now, just working his way back up to 500 overall as a coach, and I have no doubt that he will eventually get there within the next year or two. It's been nice to see how exponential his growth has been, and obviously him and LaFleur from a long-term perspective are going to look like the two best hires here.
Yep, that is well said. Let's we've gone a little longer than anticipated, but let's drop the mic and get on out of here for this edition of the Aftermath on the Orange and Black Insider. We've got a lot of stuff this week. John, I'm sorry in advance, I'm going to be tapping your expertise and time for a lot of different shows, and hopefully we'll have some cool guests and stuff this week, which I'm looking forward to. But final thoughts, my friend. Let's drop the mic and get out of here.
Yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal week here on OBI, so definitely make sure that you are locked and loaded, subscribed, hit the notifications, join us as a member on YouTube, do all this fun stuff. Thanks for dealing with me last week as I had to bolt out of here with a bloody nose. Like, I checked the tape on how that was, and you could see, like, some blood was, like, dripping down my face as before I turned off my camera and then just left Anthony out here to dry. So thank you, Anthony, for dealing with that last week. Thank you for dealing with my barely half voice, and thank you for dealing with, I don't even remember what I said when I left, because I almost blacked out to avoid getting, you know, blood all over my microphone and everything. So thank you for dealing with that last week. We are back up to 100% now, and yeah, 100% for the playoffs. Let's go.
I love it. I just yeah, man, I was just worried about you. those things aren't fun, man. I told you, sidebar convo, man, they can, and the sucky thing about those things is they can last, man. They can go 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and it's like, dude, and you can't really do anything about it. You just got to let it do its thing. So I understand. I get it. No problem. And hopefully you enjoyed the chat we had with James of 410 Sports. We might be talking with them again this week. Maybe our buddy Justin from Engraving Vids too. I don't know. We've got a lot of good options and a limited amount of days to fill it. So we got to figure this thing out, but we're hammering it down, and we'll get you a lot of good content. I promise. Again, I will say this, try not to engage the trolls this week. I know it's fun to kind of go back and forth and stuff, but sometimes people say things on social media that just they hide behind that profile pic and they try and get under your skin and do the name calling thing and all kinds of things. I'm already seeing it on our Twitter account too, by the way. So our Orange and Black Insider Twitter account, just from posting videos. So don't let it get under your skin, and let's just hope the Bengals do things the right way and win on the scoreboard, because that is what is important. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you, John, for everything you do for this program. We will be back frequently this week as we hammer out the schedule and everything with everybody else. We'll get you all kinds of different content. Keep it to cincyjungle.com for all your news, opinions, analysis, podcasts, and we'll see you this week a bunch of times, I promise. Hooday.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smart Water Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure, it's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smart Water Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.